I usually say it's a big show. It is a big show today, but it's an important show as we have Dr. Edwin Porras join the show to conclude our Flip the Script series. We're going to tell you who's going to be this year's Breece Hall, a player coming off a serious injury, coming into the year with injury questions that pays huge dividends in fantasy down the stretch. We go over a ton of interesting candidates. Of course, Anthony Richardson, Joe Burrow, Jonathan Brooks, Cooper Kupp. Who is going to be this year's injury discount player? We tell you all that and more on the show. Let's get into it. It's Tuesday, July 16th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Show. It is, as it always is, but it definitely is today, a hell of a day to talk ball. And joining me to do just that is my good pal, Dr. Edwin Porras of Fantasy Points, and a man who is truly bringing us some serious credibility on this podcast. For the listeners, the audio listeners, you can't see this, but for the YouTube viewers, by the way, you can watch this show on YouTube, they can see, Edwin, that you are literally right now in your clinic. I mean, we've got the bench back there. We got a damn sink, it looks like. We got lockers here. You have just upped the credibility of this show tenfold. So I appreciate you being here, pal.
Hey, no, man, I appreciate being here. I appreciate being able to talk ball with you. I'm a longtime listener, and I think this is the second time. Yep, second time I've been on here, but I am in my clinic. Twitter docs and the idea of a Twitter doc is pervasive right now on the Twitter streets. I know that it gets to be a little contentious, but I do treat athletes. I do see athletes. Saw them before we started recording. Going to see them once we're done recording. But in the meantime, I am just as much of a degenerate as anybody listening to this podcast. So that at the end of the day, that's what matters.
Yeah, well, what matters really, though, is that you actually do know what the hell you're talking about. You're not just somebody who was like, okay, let me talk about injuries on the internet. You've got some serious bona fides here, as they say, pal. You've got some real skins on the wall. And that's why when you, and I'm gonna out you here, that you reached out and basically, like, my mom always said growing up, like, never invite yourself over to somebody's house. Never. That was her number one rule. She had a lot of rules, but that was definitely one of her number one rules. You do not invite yourself over to somebody's house. Edwin did invite himself over to our house today, basically saying, like, hey, man, how about this? Who is this year's Breece Hall as a Flip the Script concept? As we finish, this is actually going to be our last episode of this series here. And I loved the idea. Because I think this is, it's so much, frankly, so much more interesting than some of the other topics, Edwin, that we've had on this series, because not every analyst can come on here and just BS with me about who is going to be this year's surprise sleeper, blah, blah, blah. Sure, that's easy, but it's going to be tough. And really, honestly, I love that you're really challenging yourself here, pal, because it's going to be interesting, I think, to find out who is this year's Breece Hall. And what we mean by that is, like, a guy who's coming into the season, coming off a serious injury that maybe gets a little overstated, over-discussed, and ends up paying huge dividends in fantasy, especially down the stretch of the season.
Yes, exactly. And I did invite myself. Well, you know what? I'm going to give myself some credit, Matt. I said, not saying, just saying, who's this year's Breece Hall for Flip the Script. And then I follow that up with another sandwich. I'm not saying, I'm just saying. So luckily you liked the idea. Obviously, this is a super fun series. I've been listening to the whole time. My partner in crime, my compadre, Jorge, has been on here. You guys talked a little bit of running backs, one half of the Injury Prone podcast. So I'm excited to be the second member of the podcast to try to hit some home runs. Hey, last time, you know how it goes, Matt. We're not always right. We swing sometimes big and we miss big. But the last time I was on this podcast, I said Christian McCaffrey would be healthy for the 22 season. And lo and behold, he's fine. He's been fine since then. So hopefully we can hit another home run today.
Well, and that's sort of your whole ethos, right? Your whole brand in the fantasy space is that, like, injury prone as a label is maybe misunderstood, which I think can really help us throughout the course of this discussion today. But before we get into our candidates, and we do have a lot of players to discuss, and I'd love to get to all of them. When you sent me your list of players to discuss, Ed, when I looked over and was like, I've actually got a few more here that I might want to run by you. And so hopefully we can get to as many of these as possible. But before we do that, I do just want to put Breece Hall's 2023 season into kind of perspective. And again, I think that informs us, as it always does in these Flip the Script episodes, what to look for this year's version. So What were people missing or maybe overstating about Breece Hall's injury situation coming into last year that really ended up making him not just, I would argue, a draft day value, but it, one of the, you know, as the saying goes, the guys you need down the stretch of the season?
Yeah, the number one thing was assuming Dalvin Cook wasn't Dalvin Cooked. I think that was the number one thing that really contributed. That was sort of towards the end of camp, and I think the closer to the preseason. But the number one thing, and generally speaking, this happens with ACLs is, you know, oh, well, he's got an ACL, like he's done. There's no nuance to be had. I think the number one thing is just missing the context. I don't want to ramble, but if I had to answer your question in like one succinct sentence, I would say there has to be added context to every injury situation in order to get to the truth and get to the answer and get to what's statistically more likely as opposed to statistically unlikely. And you know, the crazy thing too, Matt, is, you know, we were touting, it wasn't just me, right? Like Jeff Mueller, Dr. Jeff Mueller on Twitter, he was touting him. There were, you know, Dr. Deepak Chona, my good buddy, the orthosurgeon, he was touting Breece Hall too. I mean, we were all on the same page. And a lot of that had to do with his age, the perceived volume. And the craziest thing is I think that Breece Hall would have pushed Christian McCaffrey for that RB1 slot if Aaron Rodgers wouldn't have gone down. But we still got the value. He still finished as, I think it was RB5. So I'm ready to dig into some of the nuances of these injuries and some of these guys to see who can potentially provide the biggest value at ADP.
Yeah, he went off the board last year as running back 15, 39th overall. This is just from consensus ADP from fantasy pros. So I think, and again, like you said, he outkicked it from a season-long expectation. I think it will be informative, though, Edwin, for us to kind of like look into the Breece Hall stuff about how it was mostly at the end of the year where he really skyrocketed. And I think that's going to be informative when we talk about some of these players, right, and setting expectations. Because I've said this on the show before, and shout out to me, I did have Breece Hall on a lot of teams last year, mostly because I listened to you and other smart injury folks were like, this is something that he can get past once we get through the rocky points of the season. And that really was the case. And he ended up, like I said, being a great pick at the end of the year. That's going to be interesting when we look at some of these players to who could be maybe players that start a little slower that you might want to be patient on. So let's waste no more time. Let's get into some of these guys this year. We're going to go a little bit position by position. So let's start with some of the quarterbacks and let's start with Anthony Richardson. You know, by the time we get around to week one, Dalton Del Don may have made like Anthony Richardson an ungettable player here on Yahoo. Like if you're drafting on Yahoo Fantasy, good luck getting Anthony Richardson at a reasonable ADP. Might not happen, but he is somebody that fantasy heads are obsessed with, Edwin. At the same time, anytime you post about Anthony Richardson, anytime you say like, okay, well, look, there were some good moments last year, or hey, man, as I always say, that supporting cast is really nice. Like Anthony Richardson is set up to success. The first thing you get from the reply guys is doesn't matter, can't stay healthy, won't matter at all. So Anthony Richardson, injury situation, I think this is one of the most critical ones to discuss here coming into the year, Edwin.
Yeah, so, okay, I'm going to try to stay on track this whole time. I don't want to ramble, like I said in the beginning, but I don't need to talk about his 23 fantasy points that he averaged, right, which would have been good for QB2 on the season and the games that he was active and playing. I don't need to talk about the fact that no quarterback averaged more fantasy points per dropback than Anthony Richardson. I don't need to talk about the fact that he was on pace to rush for almost 750 yards, which would have been second to just Lamar Jackson. I don't, you know, need to talk about how realistically probably would have scored 10 to 15 rushing touchdowns, 10 on the low end. We don't need to touch on that, Matt. I think Dalton's done a great job. You've done a great job. But a lot of the stuff that happens with Anthony Richardson, a lot of the conversation that goes on has to do with the fact that as a senior, he injured his shoulder, right? He landed on that EC joint. That was in 2019, way back in 2019, probably contributed to the fracture and the bad luck that he had when it came to the shoulder that ended up fracturing. The injury he had and the mechanism actually isn't that uncommon. It just has more to do with the severity. And unfortunately, that first injury that he had probably made the joint and the bone a little vulnerable to actually fracturing and leading to this injury that needed to be repaired surgically. So injury, not that uncommon. Severity, less common, right? Honestly, though, when you talk to surgeons, when you talk to people who do this procedure and people who rehab it, it's really not the worst thing in the world. Actually, Deshaun Watson, somebody who we were not even going to cover today, his injury is probably classified as worse. What you do, I'm more worried, honestly, if I were to be worried at all about Anthony Richardson, it's a concussion, right? It's a concussion that he suffered. And he does have like way back, going way back, he has like a hamstring issue. But really, primarily, you do worry about those concussions because it was two last season. So if there was any concern, it would be for that. But when it comes to Anthony Richardson in particular, like the upside is so astronomical. I think he is the prime example of, to some people, right, to some fantasy managers, some gamers, the prime example of a guy that we are too confident in projecting injury, just like we were too confident in projecting injury for Christian McCaffrey. We were too confident in projecting injury and Saquon Barkley in 2022. We were too confident in projecting injury. I mean, the list goes on and on, right? That's sort of, you mentioned the brand. Is there risk? Of course there's risk. But if you go back and you look at Aaron Rodgers' injury history, again, I mentioned Tua's injury history. I mean, these guys get beat up, right? It just happens. There's literally a 100% injury rate in the NFL. If you play long enough, you're going to get injured, even the quarterbacks. So when you set that aside and you recognize the upside that Anthony Richardson is that presents, like, we are literally talking a Josh Allen type of upside, a Lamar Jackson type of upside. So, you know, scared money don't make money. That's why I love Dalton on here. I love listening to a lot of what Dalton has to say. He said he's his QB1. I know you said you might not take it that far, but dude, if there's going to be a finalist, I'm probably going to automatically, I want to hear your thoughts. I want to hear your takes. I want to hear about what you think that offense and that structure is going to look like for him. But I would wave him in as a finalist right away.
I'm okay with that too, just because, like you said, the upside really is astronomical. And even if he is going to get steamed up draft boards, and I'm certainly interested in seeing where he ends up going when real people start to draft, not, you know, best ball sickos, not, as you said, degenerates like me and you, and the people that exist in our bubble, and the hardcore users who have been listening to this show. And we love you, as I always say, we love you for listening to the show 100, you know, times all year round, 365 days, 100% of the months. Appreciate you. Shout out to you. But again, when real people start drafting, I'm curious to see where he actually ends up going. But regardless, he won't go as QB 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 or whatever. I think 6 is probably his ceiling. And even then, he does have upside, like you said, to outkick that. Like, that Josh Allen type of season is within his range of outcomes. And the fascinating part about that, Edwin, and what I'm interested, again, to hear you say that he's one of these players where I think we overstate the confidence in that they're going to get injured again. Because for me, like, when I go back and actually watch those games with Anthony Richardson, I don't think they were overly aggressive in terms of dialing up runs for him. I think, and I don't think he was overly aggressive in terms of taking on hits or anything like that. There were definitely times you can nitpick and everything. You know, guys like Kyler, guys like Lamar Jackson have really made a specialty out of never getting clobbered in the NFL. I think Richardson can maybe work on that a little bit. There were times where, like, you're lowering that shoulder, you probably don't need to lower that shoulder. And I trust Shane Steichen overall to design that type of offense where he doesn't have to do it. So that, again, is another reason my faith is high here. So to hear you say that he might be one of these players, I think is interesting. And I'm also cool waving him in as a finalist as well.
Okay, cool. Okay, cool. I'll say one more thing about that, right? So obviously, statistical standpoint, big samples matter, right? What matters more is how that individual responds, right? So even though I have two studies at this point published, long story short, if on the most timid side of the outcomes of what I've looked at since we're even dating back to 2015, mobile quarterbacks, there is no evidence that mobile quarterbacks are placed on the IR more, and there is no evidence that mobile quarterbacks miss more games due to injury compared to non-mobile quarterbacks, right? Those I have those two studies. We don't need to get into them. But if that's your concern in general, then it's understandable. Like you said, if there are some instances where he sort of puts himself in danger when he doesn't need to, obviously that stuff matters. But generally speaking, you get a 250-pound 6'5 freak, he can probably take on a few hits and be okay. And if he's evading the pocket and staying away from those hits, you're probably more, you know, he's probably more likely to stay healthy anyway. So you probably want him to be a little bit more mobile.
That's a great transition. Pocket passers can get injured just as much as mobile passers, because the next two guys we are discussing here, I just want to group Kirk Cousins and Aaron Rodgers together One, because I don't think either one of them is going to be our finalist in terms of this year's Breece Hall, because I just don't think the upside, and maybe you disagree with me, but I don't think the upside is there for these guys to like break fantasy or become like a league winning type of player. But I just want to group them together also because they're older guys. Aaron Rodgers is older, but they're older guys coming back from the same injury, an Achilles injury. But is there a difference here? I don't know. You can tell me. So with these two players specifically, where are we at coming into 2024?
Yeah, if you want to get really nerdy, from biomechanics.
That's why we have you here, buddy. That's why we have right, you here,
okay.
Pal.
Hey, man, I'm not a nerd. I'm probably a nerd on more levels than one, honestly. So really, if you want to get nerdy from the biomechanics perspective, Kirk Cousins' injury is different from Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers is his lead leg, and Kirk Cousins, this is his plant leg, right? So if you wanted to be a real nerd, you could say, well, Kirk Cousins might struggle with the deep ball if he can't, you know, put his back foot in the ground and then and explode to sort of hit those deep balls, then that's a concern. That's something that you would, in theory, be a little bit more concerned about than Aaron Rodgers. Then again, you flip that. And again, more nerdy biomechanics. Aaron Rodgers does the thing where he's sort of always on his tippy toes, jumping and hopping and hopping and hopping, right? So that hop is brought on by the muscle group that ends in the Achilles tendon. So is he going to be as hoppy? Is he going to be as mobile? What's that going to look like? So you can sort of make the argument for both guys probably going to be less mobile, probably going to have some calf tightness throughout the season. That's normal. Worst case scenario is we get something like what happened with Joe Burrow, where he is just, you know, he's got that calf issue, just doesn't go away for 3-4 weeks. That's probably the worst situation that could happen for either of these guys. I mean, the 35 and 40, it's not a shock that they ended up tearing their Achilles. But really, generally speaking, the re-injury rate for athletes after an Achilles tear is somewhere in like the 5% bucket. Where I would really say, like, they're probably going to be fine. I don't, you know, they can probably beat their ADP. I would definitely be drafting, I mean, maybe Drake London. I guess I'm going to have to pause on that one. I would definitely be drafting Garrett Wilson. I would definitely be drafting Breece Hall. I would definitely be drafting future Hall of Famer Tyler Conklin. I'm just kidding on that one. But I think generally speaking, these guys are going to be better for their skill.
I didn't know who you were going to say. When you said future Hall of Famer, I was like, I don't know who he's teeing this
you're
up.
Like, who on the Jets is a future Hall of Famer?
I thought it was going to be Kyle Pitts. I don't know. Who knows? But at the same
That's
time.
Fair. That's fair. It could be Kyle Pitts. Kyle Pitts could be on the show too, by the way. Maybe I missed him. But
I
anyway.
Thought about it, but I almost, yeah. You know, you're one of these Kyle Pitts chart tight end freaks, so I didn't even want to.
That's fair. That's fair. But you're really, I think to summarize, I think Kirk Cousins and Aaron Rodgers are going to be fine. Their floor, really not that dangerous of a floor. Maybe their skill guys miss them maybe 3 to 4 weeks at the worst. And I think that generally their skill players are going to be fine, but I wouldn't necessarily consider either of them world beaters.
Yeah. So just before we close the loop on these two guys, you said you don't know about drafting Drake London. Is that just like a Drake London thing, or is that a Kirk Cousins injury thing, or?
Fair question. Very fair question. I just think, I mean, I've listened to a lot of your stuff, obviously. I've listened to you talk with other people about Drake London, and it just makes me a little nervous about it. It just seems like he's getting drafted at his ceiling. And if Cousins does spread it to Kyle Pitts, if Cousins does dump off to Breece Hall a little bit more than we want, if the Falcons still don't, I mean, I know it's a new regime and everything, but if they still don't necessarily figure, I mean, I just saw that headline yesterday about like Kyle Pitts has got a lot on his plate. He's learning how to play receiver tight end. Like, I don't love to hear that necessarily, but like, I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen with that. The moral of the story, and maybe this is me, you know, talking out of both sides of my mouth when I say scared money don't make money. It seemed Drake London kind of scares me, but I'd love your take on that.
Well, yeah, look, I'd love him to not be going at wide receiver 11 in early basketball drafts. I'd love it to be like 14, 15. But at the same time, when you just look through the guys, and look, for the most part, like I have said on the show, I'm a little like, oh, with the Drake London stuff and just like he's going so high, I get it. But I love the player. I think he can take that leap into like truly a tier two superstar receiver in the league. And you just look at the guys that are going behind him. I mean, Chris Olave, Nico Collins, Deebo Samuel, Brandon Ayuk, Jalen Waddle. Like, we have to go all the way down to Mike Evans at wide receiver 17 to truly get to a guy who has just can moonwalk into a top target share and is paired with a maybe stable quarterback situation. So that's why I think Drake London's been just elevated, because he's clearly the top target on his team. He's really, really good at football. And we think this quarterback situation we definitely think it's an upgrade, but we think it's potentially a significant upgrade. And again, I think that can be kind of our final thought here, is that maybe Edwin, for the people out there that draft Drake London, the people out there that draft Garrett Wilson, like you mentioned, maybe these guys, Kirk Cousins and Aaron Rodgers, it takes them a minute to sort of figure out how to play with this like coming off this injury. So maybe a little bit of patience needs to kind of be advised here.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
All right, let's talk one more quarterback here before we move to running backs. Joe Burrow. I threw him on this list, Edwin, just because, you know, you say that injury prone is kind of overstated, whatever. It does seem like Joe Burrow, if you believe injury prone is a thing, I think you do have to start kind of raising an eyebrow at the fact that Joe Burrow has dealt with a lot of injuries. So is Burrow coming off this wrist injury that you see some people who knows what's real and who knows what's not online about literally anything, but certainly about players' injuries and stuff. But some people said like, oh, it's a really unique injury or whatever. So the Burrow thing, where are we at both this year and kind of just going forward with him as a guy that has dealt with a lot of different injuries?
It is weird. If you want to give him the benefit of the doubt, the ACL was a brutal hit. I mean, that was something you don't see. He broke his kneecap. He had every ligament. His knee exploded, basically. So I don't know who would have survived that. We just saw Nick Chubb, you know, who we're going to talk about a little bit too. He just squatted whatever 600 pounds, and his knee was not, you know, did not look good on that injury last year. So, you know, you could give Burrow a little bit of a pass on the ACL, but this wrist injury is weird. It's strange. Okay. It's not anything that we've probably ever seen any quarterback go through, especially in the modern era. But that doesn't mean that it's not necessarily something that he can't bounce back from, right? The calf, that's a soft tissue thing that happens. Again, I would just say, go back and look at the first few years of Aaron Rodgers' career. He's like a guy where he's like, dude, that guy could not stay on the field. Talent aside and overall how it ended for him aside, Carson Wentz was another guy that I was on like saying like he's just had some really bad luck. It's just been he's had a rough go at it. There are guys you can list time after time after time and just say like, hey, they've just had bad luck. It's too soon for me to be like, hey, Burrow is just like this injury prone guy. I wouldn't draft him. The Bengals shouldn't have paid him, blah, blah, blah. I'm not there. I think that this wrist injury was strange. I want to see how this season goes. But usually we have this mass hysteria and people lose their minds. And then, you know, the guys rattle off 16, 17 game seasons where they're fine. So when it comes to this specific injury in general, we also need to look at the data. What does the data say? Generally speaking, right, there's not a one-to-one. This comes in basketball players. Throwing a football, believe it or not, really isn't that much different than shooting a basketball. It's just a matter of volume, right? And so when they looked at basketball players, NBA players who had this specific injury, they found that at their follow-up, their joint and their imaging, right, so the ligaments and the bones, they all looked aligned. They all had improvements in pain. They all had returned to their baseline of grip strength. They all were able to get back to shooting a basketball in particular. Obviously, it's not a one-to-one, but I think that the mass hysteria was from that interview that got done. And I think at the end, the doc even said, like, but he'll probably end up being fine. And that's going to be the case for Burrow when it, from the wrist perspective.
Probably wasn't the thing that they clipped out, but yeah.
Exactly. It's not what they clipped, but that's what he said at the end. So when it comes to this specific injury, I'm not too concerned with Joe Burrow. If you want to sort of, again, be nervous about like, well, it just seems strange. I understand the hesitation, but I'm not at the point where I'm ready to label him, you know, injury prone and write him off. Maybe in Dynasty, it'll shave a year, 2 years off of his peak, but that's not really necessarily a concern for us here in 2024. But again, Burrow, more of a pocket guy, obviously can have major games, but I just don't personally see him as bouncing back and being one of those guys that's like, man, you should have drafted Joe Burrow, right? You can probably get replacement level production elsewhere in the draft.
Yeah, I mean, especially I mentioned Anthony Richardson, QB6. Joe Burrow's right there, QB7. Kyler Murray is the guy that's the kind of complete sandwich there. But, you know, Joe Burrow, like Dak Prescott could give you his production. I think Jordan Love could give you his production. Like even Brock Purdy, if Ayuk stays in San Francisco, which I think he will. He just requested a trade today. My gut is he still stays in San Francisco. I remember the Deebo Samuel saga when that happened. I think that Purdy, you know, could even potentially give you Burrow's production as a fantasy quarterback. So I agree with you. I don't think he's a finalist, but I still think it was good for people to hear your thoughts on just where he's at this point, especially because this wrist injury has been one that people have labeled as weird, which is what you kind of signed off on.
Thank you.
Okay, let's go to, man, Edwin, this one's tough. Nick Chubb is our first running back who we're going to talk about here today. You mentioned it. I mean, grisly, like, unsettling injury to see live happen, you know, to the point that I think that was one of the first ones last year that it was Joe Buck and Troy Aikman on the call. They were like, yeah, we're not showing you that replay, basically.
Right call. That was the right call.
Right call. I actually was charting. I think it must have been either Pickens or Deontay Johnson or something recently. And I was like, oh man, this is about to be the Nick Chubb play. Like, you know, just like fast forwarding through like, you know, the Brown side of the ball or whatever. And it's like, ah, oh God, there it is. It was tough to even just see it back on film again,
right?
Because we all love Nick Chubb. But you just mentioned it. We saw him out there squatting. What was it? 600 pounds. The bar.
So many pounds,
many pounds. The bar is bent in the video, the whole thing. You know, the fantasy aggregators, the aggregator bros in general are freaking out about the bent bar and the many, many pounds that Nick Chubb is squatting. But, Edwin, where do we stand on Nick Chubb coming off of a grisly injury, a complicated injury, and not the first time he's had a complicated, you know, big time? You can tell me what it really is. I'll just say big, scary, bad knee injury in his career.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's good to clarify what happened to him before. In college, when he was at Georgia, he tore his PCL, his hamstring. It was basically everything except the ACL. So that's important to sort of recognize. He dislocated the knee at that point, too. That did happen. Fast forward, he's one of the most efficient running backs literally in the modern era. He his yards per carry is out of this world. And he's generally one of the most likable guys, I think, in the NFL. So that's where we're at with Nick Chubb. When he had this injury in 2023, so we actually ended up having, and this is important because I think a lot of people calculate return dates from the day of the injury. It's actually the day of the surgery. So Nick Chubb actually had two surgical dates. His first surgical date was to fix the meniscus, right? That was on, I had it here in front of me. It was on September 29th of 23.
Okay.
Then they went back in, they repaired the ACL on November 14th of 23. So that's when the clock starts.
Okay.
Generally speaking, with ACLs, most surgeons and PTs will not release athletes until at least that 9-month mark, because we know that it's an astronomical amount of athletes re-tear if they come back before 9 months. There's, I don't know if there's something magical about it. We the data and the science still, we don't really truly know why. We just know that it happens if you come back before 9 months. So 9 months from November 14th, whatever that is like August something, right? The middle of August.
Yep.
So you also have to take into consideration he had the meniscus and he has the history of this in general. Could you call it a revision, which means you go back in and do the same surgery again? Not technically, but to a certain degree, it's another major surgery to the same joint. So if you add another month to that, that's also typically you get a revision. PTs and surgeons, they say, hey, this time we're gonna tack on another month, right? So you're even from an availability perspective, you're looking at potentially end of September to really see Nick Chubb back, seeing his full workload volume. You're probably looking at another month before you're seeing him actually bounce back and look like Nick Chubb if that happens again. So, okay, I've already rambled a lot. I don't know if that's a lot. I don't know if you have anything to add from there, Matt.
No, listen, I think that all makes a lot of sense to me. So, there's something about, like, I don't know anything about anything when it comes to this, you know, knee injuries, anything like that. But just when you see something like that happen on live TV, you're like, this is going to be complicated, like this return process here. And I think that's basically what you are saying as well.
Yeah, exactly. And so we're really looking at, like I said, some sort of, you know, end of September, middle of October, like Halloween is probably like a time where we may look up and like, oh, look, it's Nick Chubb. He's taking the carries, right?
Yeah.
Here's the thing about returning after an ACL. And so these are basically all the boxes that Breece Hall did check last year. I'm going to compare it to how many Nick Chubb. These are basically criteria of what we see in successful returns in the first year after an ACL among running backs. But the number one thing I want to get across is most people think like, oh yeah, the ACL, it doesn't matter anymore. It's a thing in the past. It's not true. 30% of running backs in the NFL don't ever come back. This is since 2011. Don't come back at all in year two, right? Some of them don't come back at all in the first year. it happens, right? We saw that with Jerick McKinnon. You see that with Lamar Miller. He just sort of fell off the face of the earth. So I wanted to make that point first. But here are the criteria, and I'll say whether... So I'll say the ones that he does meet, right? So a minimum of 9 months to rehab. He got that. But really, should it be 10 months? Okay, I still gave it to him. I'm trying to be generous. High NFL draft capital, obviously. Okay, so that's where it ends. So the next criteria, 26 years or younger. Nick Chubb doesn't meet that. Minimal complexity of injury. You just mentioned it. He doesn't meet that. Nick Chubb is a freak athlete, right? But when we're talking like spark score, whatever, we're talking top 5th percentile in athleticism score. He's close, doesn't quite meet that, right? So the other thing is projected pass catching work and a high touch volume count. How much are they going to give him when he comes back, even if he does come back and look like Nick Chubb, right? So he doesn't meet that either. So he meets basically two of the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 criteria. Generally speaking, I would just write most guys off. Again, I said, and I wrote in this in the profile before we saw him squat 600 pounds. I basically said, I give Nick Chubb a 5 to 10, this is arbitrary, a 5 to 10% chance to come back and actually just be Nick Chubb, because he is a freak, right? Sometimes you have outliers. You have to sort of give benefit of the doubt where they've earned it. And Nick Chubb has definitely earned that. But, you know, on one side, I'll say, yeah, there's a 5 to 10% chance he comes back and it's like, oh, he smashes. There's an, what is that, you know, 90, 95% chance that he has like a Javonte Williams type season, which is somewhere in the neighborhood of like 11 fantasy points per game. But I would, you know, I know there's a lot there, but I definitely want to get your take on like, what is that backfield going to look like in your opinion? How does it project out? I know that they're sort of leaning more pass heavy. Does that involve Nick Chubb, even if he does come back? There's a lot that I still would like to suss out too.
Yeah, the pass catching part of this is pretty key, because when we're talking about Breece Hall last year, week 12 on, these were his target totals: 9, 8, 9, 2. Weird. 16, 9, 2. Like, that's a lot of pass catching work that even when he wasn't having these monster games towards the end of the season, he was still being boosted up. The floor was boosted up because of that pass catching work. That's not going to be the case with Nick Chubb. It's never been the type of player he was anyways, but it's certainly not going to be this year, because as you mentioned, you bring in Jerry Jeudy, like they've just clearly committed to being more of a Deshaun Watson centric team. And we didn't talk Watson in this episode, you know, even though he's coming off of a shoulder situation. I'm glad you tacitly mentioned that thing about Watson, because I didn't want to talk about Watson just because like the crux with him is just, is he going to be a good quarterback or not? And like whether he's healthy or not is then like a whole separate question. So that would be like a 40-minute podcast all on its own. But he's at least a part of this discussion here with the Nick Chubb thing, because it's what they want to be. Like, their actions are speaking as loud as their words here, that they want to transition this team kind of away from Nick Chubb as a central gravitational point to Deshaun Watson. Whether that's going to be successful or not, again, is almost a separate conversation. So I guess bottom line here, Edwin, because like they have other guys there. They have Jerome Ford, who's had some moments. I think Donta Foreman's had some really quality moments here the last couple of years as a fill-in back for the Bears and the Panthers. I think those guys can capably hold down the fort for the first part of the season. But do you think, like, do you want to make Nick Chubb a finalist here, even though, like you said, it's a pretty low likelihood he's ever the superstar that he is again? But still, he is coming off the board as running back 41. And if he can finish the season strong, there could be a chance that is a value. Or are you just kind of like, this situation is a little too dicey even for your no risk it, no biscuit blood?
Yeah. But I think it might be sort of I would modify what you said there at the end. I would say it's not so much that I think it's risky to draft Nick Chubb. I would just say that I don't think that it's going to end up paying off from an upside perspective. So I would not wave him in.
All right, cool. Then we will not. But I'm glad that you've got at least the candle lit for Nick Chubb, because I want to keep the candle lit for Nick Chubb. Whether it ends up being a great pick or not, I think is a whole separate conversation. Next running back, though, here I think could be that guy. Jonathan Brooks, Carolina Panthers, rookie running back. I think he definitely could fit the mold here of this year's Breece Hall, because if people don't know, they don't follow college football, they don't follow prospects. He was the consensus top back in the draft. Was Jonathan Brooks. He went as the top back in the draft, but there's a chance he could have gone much higher if he did not tear his ACL in his final year at Texas, which Edwin, I do believe that was a November ACL tear. So a lot of the same kind of criteria that you just threw out about Nick Chubb with like the 9 months, the whole thing does apply to the rookie here from Carolina.
Yes, 100%. So surgical date was December 5th of 23. So 9 months return right around the opening day of the NFL season. So we are right on the cusp. You know, we could discuss how sharp the Panthers have or have not been. The sharp move to, you know, in an honest moment would probably be let's sit Brooks for 2-3 weeks and then bring him back.
Sure.
But hey, he could be back week one. But yeah, let's review those criteria again very quickly. We can be a little quicker this time. 9 months to rehab. Close, not quite, right? No cigar. You really want the guy to be in camp, training with the team, you know, taking reps by the time they get to camp. He's not quite there, right? High draft capital, 26 years or younger. It's good. Minimal complexity. Everything we know, he's good. Top five athleticism score. Close, not too close. Not quite there. He's no Breece Hall. He's no Saquon Barkley. Projected catch, and this, again, I want your take again, because this is such a skeleton key here. Projected pass catching, high touch volume. That one I'm sort of saying I'm not sure if he'll get it. But if we want to, and this was kind of a quirky little statistic, right? So he's being drafted however low. I think you mentioned it at the top there. I don't have it here in front of me.
He's running back 27. He's 27. The 90th overall player in early
90th overall player. So the closest comp, and I'm treading lightly here, I'm not saying that Todd Gurley is the same prospect as Jonathan Brooks here. I'm not saying that.
Sure.
But he's the closest comparison, right? So Todd Gurley had the same injury around the same time, had surgery around the same time, got drafted by the Rams. He finished that season as RB8 on a fantasy points per game basis. The Rams were middle of the road in terms of expected points added by rushing. They were middle of the road in offense in general. They were a Jeff Fisher offense, right? That's why I have Jeff Fisher in the league that we're in. He's a poster boy, the cover boy for the sleeper. I love me some Jeff Fisher. Who doesn't, man? Strive to be average at everything you do, right?
Yeah,
so the thing with Gurley that year when he finished RB8, his efficiency really wasn't that great. It wasn't anything, you know, groundbreaking, but he had 10 rushing touchdowns and he added every game. So per game, he added 3 points just from receiving work, right?
Yeah.
So that's obviously not anywhere. That's a lot of guys don't get that at all. So that's what was helpful for him. And then this is just like a quirk, Matt, but I wanted to add it in here because it's just also very like weird. Together in 2023, Miles Sanders and Chuba Hubbard on a points per game basis, they finished as RB8. Todd Gurley that year finished as RB8. I thought that was weird. I'm not saying that means anything, but I thought it was a little, you know, interesting. And I think the old, like literally this offense can only get better, right, in Carolina. I'm optimistic on Jonathan Brooks. And really, I was thinking about this last night, and it really, that's when it hit me. And I was like, God, the Panthers just aren't going to be that good. And then I think about the Jets. And then I think about Breece Hall, again, the topic of this show. And I think to myself, well, dang, pick 90. I mean, I'm going to give away my strategy in the draft, you know, in the league that we're in together, Matt. I have the number one pick, which I hate, by the way. I hate that number one pick. But it is
what a horrible problem to have.
No, yeah, it is okay. A terrible problem. Woe is me, man. I hate that pick. I want to trade it back. You can have it if you want. But what I'm thinking here. Right, it's a super flex league. How easy would it be to go Christian McCaffrey, anchor, and not have to worry about taking your RB2 until you get to Jonathan Brooks? I like Jonathan Brooks. I think I like him more every day. I want to hear what you have to say about that offense, about the dump offs, about Bryce Young, what they can be from an offensive perspective. Because if you're in on Brooks from an offensive perspective, I think he might be a finalist here.
Let's go before we talk about the current Panthers. I want to go back to that Todd Gurley example because you pull up his rookie season. First two games didn't play him. They did exactly what you just said here that they should do with Jonathan Brooks. Didn't play him at all. Week three for the St. Louis Rams. They weren't even in LA yet. 6 carries, 9 yards. He played 14 snaps. So again, basically for the better part of 3 games, he didn't play.
Mm-hmm.
He comes out week four. 19 carries, 146 yards, 2 more catches for 15 yards on 2 targets. He actually, I mean, almost 9 yards per reception that year, 4.8 yards per rush, along with the 10 touchdowns. Like, man, that was such a dynamic season. Shout out to my guy, Todd Gurley. What a great talent. I agree with you. Brooks is not in that level of talent. Also, shout out to Todd Gurley for once for once tweeting at me to stop hating, man, when I said he was going to be a not good draft pick the next year, which
Well,
I don't want to say who was right in that situation, but it wasn't the guy who said stop hating, man. But Todd Gurley and I have since had many good conversations. Wonderful guy, Todd Gurley. I wish his career ended differently. By the way, in terms of like how good this team was, the Rams were, of course, they were 7-9 this year. So it wasn't like they weren't like ripping the doors off or anything. So coming back to the Panthers here, I think he is going to get a lot of work when he's ready to go. And if you just look at the running backs last year, that were involved here from a receiving perspective, 36% success rate on his targets for Chuba Hubbard, not good. Miles Sanders, 39%. Not that great either. I think there is a real big need, buddy, for like a dump off threat. And I do think he's going to be a big foundation piece to the offense. So I think the Panthers, I've kind of slowly come around to the Panthers being a little bit better than we think they might be. So I'm willing to wave Jonathan Brooks into the finalist category here, unless we have some better players as we go through the next few players on the list.
No, I'm ready to go, man. I like that. I like that. Let's wave him in.
All right. I think he is definitely someone who fits this category. Okay. Last running back here, and then we'll pick up the pace because I know we're running a little short on time here with you, man. But Javonte Williams, I'll be honest, you put Javonte Williams on the list, and I was like, I don't know if I care about Javonte Williams, who's running back 30. He's 102nd overall. But then again, maybe you can tell me if I'm wrong, just because, you know, he's not coming off a good year last year, but that was the first year off of the injury. So are we potentially looking at a much better version of Javonte Williams this year in what is still a crowded Denver backfield, but much similar to the conversation we just had about Brooks? If the Broncos are better than we think they're going to be, Williams, or theoretical RB1, could be a value for this team.
Yeah, so I think the number one thing to talk about when it comes to Javonte Williams, the reason I put him on here was because I think there is a conversation to be had, right? So if we look at Breece Hall from 2022 to 2023, Breece Hall saw, after his ACL, he saw an increase in 4% missed tackles force. He saw a plus 66% receptions per game, right? Javonte Williams, minus 48% missed tackles force per attempt, minus 22% yards created per attempt, minus 27%. Percent receptions per game. Crazy enough, he still matched his previous season production. He didn't break out like we were hoping if he would have stayed healthy, but you know, the injury was severe. To be 100% honest with you, he probably should not have come back as quickly as he did, realistically. I think sometimes rehab professionals, surgeons, teams, they can get a little bit over their skis. Even the athlete is ready to get back and they just do it too quickly. You saw him then have the groin injury, not surprising. But I did want to bring him up because, you know, in year two, for the guys who do bounce back from the surgery in year two, for the guys who do stay in the league, in year two after an ACL, they see an increase in 17% missed tackles force per attempt, increase in 9% yards created per attempt, and an increase in 39% receptions per game. I'm not going to wave Javonte Williams in as a finalist simply because of what you already mentioned. The backfield's crowded. I don't know if I trust Kevin James. I mean, Sean Payton. I'm not entirely certain what we're going to get from that offense. And we don't know if Bo Nix is going to be any good. So, you know, the best case scenario, I think Javonte, again, can average 13, maybe 14 points per game max. But I don't think that he's going to be a guy that's going to be a difference maker necessarily. I think he can beat his ADP and that's about it.
I mean, if you do look back at Javonte Williams' receiving stats last year, they're really impressive. So are Jaleel McLaughlin's, though. These guys, 37% targets per route run, 44% targets per route run for Williams and McLaughlin. But I don't know how much of that is Russell Wilson induced. And I don't know how much, because he was just, you know, reading long, reading check down. That was a Russell Wilson experience last year. But I'm glad we just talked about him briefly, just because he is kind of a post dead zone back to me this year, Javonte Williams. And if he ends up having a nice year, he could end up being a decent draft day value. But I'm with you. I don't think the upside's there for him to be a finalist. And I think we might have a better upside candidate here as our third player among these wide receivers. Let's talk about the receivers and let's start with Cooper Kupp. I know you want to have a Cooper Kupp conversation here, and I'm willing to definitely do that. And I'll share kind of my thoughts on his season last year, going back and charting him for reception perception. But first of all, just injury wise with Cooper Kupp here, Edwin, where are we at after a lot of stuff the last few seasons?
All right, let me walk you through the 2023 story of Cooper Kupp. August 1st, 2023, injured hamstring in camp. August 31st, had a hamstring setback. Weeks 1 through 4, out due to the hamstring strain. Okay, now this is where you guys want to start paying attention, listeners. Week 5 and 6, Cup averages 20 points per game, half PPR. This is all half PPR. Week 7, Puka erupts for 154 yards. Cup scores 5.9 points. Week 8, Stafford injures his thumb, leaves the game, also misses week 9. In both of those games, right, Cup scores 4.1, 5.8 points. Puka scores 4.3, 3.2 points. Week 11, Cup injures an ankle, scores 1.3 points. Week 12, Cup scores 3.3 points. Puka scores 2.7. Okay, so that's sort of the frame. That's the first three quarters of the season. From weeks 13 to 17, Cup averages 14.8 points, finishes as wide receiver 11 on a points per game basis. Obviously, Puka finishes as wide receiver 3. There's no denying the context of the Rams offense has changed. That's what I want you to get into. I want to hear your expertise and hear what you have to say about that, right? But how exactly has that impacted Cup? Primarily what we saw is that from a team target share perspective, Cup is still, he was still right in the neighborhood. Well, those last 4 weeks, he was at 24.6 and Puka was just around 23. The biggest change, this is per fantasy points data, the biggest thing wasn't the target share, it was the air yard share. Cooper Cup saw a 20% air yard share. Puka Nacua saw somewhere in the neighborhood of, I think it was 30%, right? So that was where I think most of the conflict came, when they were both on the field and healthy and Stafford was healthy. What I'm saying here though, Matt, is that Cooper Kupp's going off as like wide receiver 28, I believe it is, or something like that. He's the last Triple Crown winner, Super Bowl MVP. We know he's a freaking nut job when it comes to working and staying in shape and doing everything he can. There was like some article, or I don't even remember what it was, something about like Puka trained with him in the first 2 weeks. Puka threw up like every workout for 2 weeks or something with Cooper Kupp. Like there's something crazy out there like that. Like,
incredible.
So all of those things in the context, keeping the context in mind. So then listeners are probably like, well, he's 30 years old, 31 years old, and he had a hamstring strain. Boy, if only there was someone we could learn a lesson from who set the precedent for a 31-year-old wide receiver coming off of a severe hamstring strain who, myself included, and everybody else faded, only for him to go on and have a wide receiver 3 season on a points per game basis. Keenan Allen, looking at you. If only there was a precedent for that, I will take a mea culpa on me. I want to talk about everything I'm right about. I was super wrong on Keenan Allen. He came back and I was super wrong on him. So he's already set the precedent that even though there's a 33% re-injury rate in hamstrings amongst wide receivers, which is, by the way, the highest recurrence rate of every injury amongst all skill players, he can still do it, right? Cup can still ball. These elite guys, they don't just fall off a cliff. I understand there is some risk involved, but we know right now, Cooper Kupp, in my opinion, is being drafted at his floor, right? That's not something that I am confident will happen. And if you look, and this is the last thing, then I want to hear your thoughts here, Matt. So over the last 4 weeks of the season, like I said, they finished, Puka finished wide receiver 5, Kupp finished wide receiver 11. I mean, just some wide receiver tandems. Just let's say since, you know, in 2023, you had Tyreek and Jalen Waddle, they finished wide receiver 1 and wide receiver 25. Deebo and Ayuk, wide receiver 9, wide receiver 14. And you look at 2022, right? Same thing, Tyreek and Waddle, wide receiver 4, wide receiver 13. You're telling me that we can't get you're telling me at worst we're going to get a Mike Evans and Chris Godwin from 2022, which is a wide receiver 14 and a wide receiver 20 finish. Like, I think Puka and Kupp, especially with Sean McVay, one of the best offensive minds in football, I think we can get somewhere in the neighborhood of a two top 12 wide receivers from this offense, regardless of the current situation with Cooper Kupp. I have gotten more and more excited about Cooper Kupp. I know he's rising right now, but I still think his ADP is too low. I would say Cooper Kupp, because of his body of work and what we know and the precedent and the data that we're looking at, I think that he deserves to be a finalist in this conversation. But again, I want your thoughts.
Okay, so just number one, what I love about this potential receiver duo is that I think it is going to be a highly, highly concentrated offense, because two things. One, I think they're going to play more 12 personnel this year. I know that Tyler Higbee's coming off an injury, but they signed Colby Parkinson to a pretty decent deal. I liked a couple of the very, very brief flashes from Davis Allen, rookie tight end last year. Hopefully no one in my Scott Fishbowl league is listening, because I want to take him with my last pick, Davis Allen. I almost took him earlier, but then I was like, I feel like I can get this guy in the last round. Anyways, It's a whole other thing. No one cares.
Get your guy, Matt. Get your guy.
No one cares about. I'm not saying Davis Allen is my guy. Okay, I'm just saying like I want to take him in the Scott Fishbowl draft. And
you should
chart
him.
I'm almost. I'm about to kick you off this podcast. Don't do that again. That's your last warning. But okay, so Cooper Kupp. By the way, speaking of like tight end stuff, Cooper Kupp has always been like borderline slot receiver. Does some tight end things. I think if the closest thing I've charted to a tight end is maybe Cooper Kupp or Alan Lazard, honestly, which is a chart I regret doing. Anyway, so Cooper Kupp last year, you look at his success rates. First of all, man coverage success rate is definitely down from the previous two seasons where he won the Triple Crown. And then in 2022, when he was still super productive, it's down to like 65% from 70.6% in 2022. But his success rate versus zone number is still really good, 83.3%. It's not at the crazy high highs that it was in that 21 season, which that 91.4% is the second highest I've ever charted. I think it's fair to lower the expectations down to 83.3%, which is still, by the way, very good and right in line with like his 2019 and 2020 season. His success rate versus press is actually still within the range of where it was in 22. So we're definitely looking at a diminished player last year, but I think that Keenan Allen, who we both were wrong about, we've just said, I think he was more diminished in that 22 season, which scared me off of his 23 season, which that was more of like an NFL take than a fantasy take, or at least that's what it should have been. Honestly, I was wrong about that for sure. So, but I think Kupp was better last year than Keenan Allen was on film from a zone beating perspective, especially, which is important because to me, I think Puka's the one on this team. Like that's going to be settled and done in my estimation. I think he's going to be the top receiver. He will be the top receiver, but I think there's a big room for Cooper Kupp to be that complementary threat here, but it is going to come in some different ways. Like you mentioned, the air yards were down for Cooper Kupp last year. I think that's going to remain the case because you look at the routes that Cooper Kupp ran, his slant route percentage is way up. His flat route percentage is way up. The screens are down because he's not the design target guy anymore. But where he can still make some big plays, Edwin, corner routes, out routes, those success rates were still really high as well. So I do think he is a diminished player for sure. And look, I always say with older receivers, I'm least confident forecasting the age cliff. Like history has taught us that with reception perception, but still, I do think there's enough on film from Cooper Kupp to say like, oh, this is a guy that we can bet on having a really quality season. And what, like I said, what could be a very highly concentrated offense, and anybody that does like work with yards per route run or per route data would say like these 12 personnel teams that mostly run two receivers, the yards per route run is going to be higher. And I think that's going to be the case with these Rams players because they want to run the ball at a high clip and at a high efficiency clip.
Yes, 100%. So that makes me feel a lot better about what you're saying because I think right now he's being drafted. Those two are being drafted as if it's mutually exclusive that one has to have a big season without the other one. I don't think that's the case. I'll go on record and say I think they can still, based on what you just said, there's no reason why, especially with Matt Stafford healthy, Sean McVay on the sticks, I don't think would we really be shocked if we looked up and they're both top 10, top 12 wide receivers? Like I wouldn't be that shocked. And all of the data that you're looking at and like reception charting him and stuff like that was through a hamstring strain, through an ankle sprain, right? So even if he is diminished.
And I'll throw one more piece of context here too. The sample got better and better the farther we got like through the season. Like the later season games were much better from a separation or route running standpoint than the early part of the season.
Exactly. And that's exactly what we would say. Like if we were going to really say like a Kupp is or any aging receiver is deteriorating, I think it stands to reason we would probably expect that to go the opposite direction. So, I mean, I really like Kupp. I think that he was dealt a really crappy hand last season. And I would love if Mr. Receiver, if the receiver guy, big receiver, you know, CEO, CFO,
big receiver,
would waive Cooper Kupp in S Finals.
Okay. I want to, but I want to talk about just one more guy because I think he's worth the discussion here too. That's Tank Dell. The other three guys we were going to talk about was Christian Watson, Mike Williams, TJ Hockenson. Hockenson, you can give me like a sentence on. Mike Williams, I don't even think we need to discuss because like, okay, Mike Williams comes off an ACL. If he's good, that's good for the Jets, but it's probably not good for fantasy. And Christian Watson, like, I'm curious on your thoughts about Watson, but at the same time, like, I've said this a lot. There are a lot more variables to Christian Watson than he just needs to stay healthy. I know the per route data is great, but like, there are a lot of other questions about his game individually than just the injury. So we can finish on those guys with maybe a one liner, but I do want to just break down Tank Dell here real quick, because I have said that he had, correct me if I'm wrong, but it was a pretty similar injury to Tony Pollard the previous season, right? Where it was the broken leg or whatever. But I get hung up on the fact that Tony Pollard literally said to me, to my face at the Super Bowl, I was not myself until like week 11 of last year. Is Tank Dell, who did have his injury earlier, it was like around week 13 of the NFL season, not in the playoffs like it was with Tony Pollard, but do we need to be worried about a similar situation with Tank Dell? Because like you're saying, part of the theme of this podcast is, yeah, guys come back, but they're not always back, if that makes sense.
No, yeah, and that's why this is all, and I mentioned at the top, right, like, there's a difference between looking at an individual versus looking at a sample. We're looking at averages versus individuals. And that's really where my job is tough. And most analysts in general, fantasy analysts' job is tough, is you don't know how the individual is going to respond. Right. And Pollard himself said, like, I wasn't myself. Barkley himself, he said at his first season back after his ACL, he had the ankle sprain and then he just didn't feel like himself. That can happen, right? Those are the outliers. Those are the guys that you are, I don't want to say concerned about, but those are the guys that you worry about missing because, you know, Pollard, that price tag was high and I co-signed on Pollard. I was wrong about Pollard. You know, there was no way that I could have, or anybody could have predicted that he was going to respond the way that he did. So that's, we got to take that L, and that's super unfortunate. So yeah, but yes, when it comes to that injury, dude, all of the data in the aggregate, their median after that injury is like 98% of what it was of their pre-injury production. Their average is higher than their pre-injury production. Like, there is no statistical reason to look at a guy who suffered this injury aside from, again, the individual, and say like, oh, we need to fade them for any reason. So that's tough. The other thing obviously you have to worry about with Tank Dell is like, he did have a bullet. He took a bullet. I mean, we can't,
literally,
right?
Got,
like,
shot, yeah.
Exactly. So I'm super glad that he's fine. It sounds like it was a relatively minor. It does sound like it went through the back of his thigh. So, I would keep an eye on, hey, did he, is he having hamstring tightness, right? Because that's a realistic, like, applicable piece of information we can use, is that the bullet hit the back of his thigh. So that could potentially implicate his hamstrings, right? Just depends. Maybe it does nothing. But that is something to keep in mind. But again, like, the data doesn't show that these guys really suffer any kind of setback. What I would say, and what I would argue with Tank Dell, is like, obviously the size is a thing. Did he get injured because of the size? I don't necessarily think so. I mean, he was just wrong place, wrong time, around a pile, right? You learn in Pop Warner, not to criticize Tank Dell, but you learn in Pop Warner, like, don't stand around a pile type thing. I know they sort of sent him that direction, but I think that Tank Dell can perform and do what he did last season. I don't necessarily see that there will be any detriment to his game. Again, unless he responds at an individual level from a psychological perspective and a performance perspective, worse than you'd expect. But in the aggregate, guys off this injury, they don't have much trouble.
That's good. Love to hear that. I don't know. I'm going to leave it up to you for our third finalist. Again, unless you want to make a big case for Watson or Hockenson or Williams, which I doubt you do. Cup or Tank Dell for our finalists? I'm going to leave it up to you.
Cooper Kupp.
All right. Sounds good. Do you have anything you want to share on? I know we're running short on time, but Watson or Hockenson specifically, just like quickly, because I don't think they'll be a finalist.
So, at best, Hockenson's going to be back at best around Halloween, like, back, okay. Not even like performing, like, back by Halloween.
Just playing.
Like, wow. Exactly. Yeah. At best, he is probably an IR stash. I think in season long leagues, that's fine. He's still going higher than I would probably take him at this point as a stash. But when he comes back, he'll probably be fine. I don't think he's going to, be a world beater. When it comes to Watson and everybody, everybody's read about thigh gap gate, right? He's closing that thigh gap. Make sure there's no thigh gap there, right? His legs are different sizes. I think it's something you address when you're a PT. This is literally like bread and butter what we look at. The Green Bay medical staff probably already knew the thigh, size difference existed. Is it? It's chicken or egg. Did did his muscle shrink because he was on the injured, you know, not injured reserve, but he was on the shelf for so long and he's had these recurring problems, or, you know, did it exist beforehand? And that is contributed to the problem. There's literally no slam dunk to say just because they close that gap that he's going to be 100% healthy. What's good is that they're trying, right? They're trying what they can, but, you know, there's no comparison. Will Fuller's the closest comp, and that didn't end well necessarily. Isaac Bruce, he was in years 3 and 4 when he had the hamstring stuff and he got over it. Even Odell Beckham, right? He had stuff his rookie year, didn't miss time the second year. Debo is the next guy who had trouble the first 2 years. He got over it. But again, Christian Watson and Debo Samuel could not be any more different. I mean, that's
more
like
the players. Yeah,
that's
right.
Like taking it. That's like taking a picture. What's that picture of, like, DK Metcalf and whoever, like, they're like, they're back at, like, Drew Lock, and being like, these guys play the same sport. Like, that would be Christian Watson and Debo Samuel. So, long story short, I think Watson still has some upside. At best, I think that if Watson can stay healthy, I do think he can contribute. But I also would, you know, I've listened to what you've said about him, and there are a lot of problems in that offense when the offense runs through him. So he's probably more of a volatile piece, but I do think he still presents some upside. But none of these guys I would necessarily wave in as finalists.
Yeah, I'm much more confident in Tank Dell as a player, but he and Watson share similarities in terms of, I mean, let me say, much, much more confident in Tank Dell's player. But they share similarities in terms of their receiver cores are crowded, and that's a big part of why I don't think they can be our finalists here, because it's got to be a pretty high honor. So, all right, Dr. Edwin Porras, as our guest, I'm going to let you go first, which honestly is not that nice because it's harder to go first in this exercise. And you give me your order 1, 2, 3 in terms of most to least likely to be this year's Breece Hall, a value pick coming off a serious injury that ends up giving you a big season, especially down the final stretch of the fantasy football year. Anthony Richardson, Jonathan Brooks, Cooper Kupp, put them in order. Most to least likely to be this year's Breece Hall.
Yeah, this is brutal. I probably would say Brooks at 3. And if we're following the true, you know, Breece Hall archetype that we're really looking for, a guy coming off serious injury, he was counted out. Fourth round pick, first round value. Probably have to go number. God, this is really hard, Matt. Sorry, I know I'm stalling. This is really bad podcasting. My heart says, my heart is going to say number 2, Anthony Richardson, number 1, Cooper Kupp. But that was hard. I would take both of those guys and where they're going now. I think that Kupp's going to present, like I said, it's really hard to find a top 10 wide receiver, you know, after the first however many picks. And that's what Kupp's going, like, wide receiver 20, whatever we said, 28. I think that he's got another top 10 season in him. But I still love Anthony Richardson. The only thing with Richardson is, like you said, as a casual start to roll in, Anthony Richardson's ADP is probably only going to go up, where I can see Cooper Kupp's ADP actually dropping as the casuals roll in. And the last thing they remember is Cooper Kupp going on the IR. So that's why I would rank it. I'm trying to be as pragmatic as possible here.
So I think Cooper Kupp is actually my 3rd. I think I'll put him at 3 just because.
Tough run out for me.
Well, it's not a tough run out for you. This is, like you said, you struggled because this is a close call. I think it's tough with these 3. Although, like, I came out pretty confident that Kupp was 3 and you came out pretty confident that Brooks was 3. So maybe we don't totally agree on this one. But the only thing with Kupp is just like, okay, so you get a top 12 receiver. You can find a top 12 receiver somewhere. I don't think he has potential to be a top 5 receiver, unless Puka gets hurt, which, knock on wood, whatever. I hope he doesn't get hurt. Puka rocks. Like, unless Puka gets hurt, I don't think he has that season in his range of outcomes. I don't think Brooks has a top 5 running back season necessarily in his range of outcomes, but I do think he could be a running back 1, which would be a huge value where he goes. And I think Anthony Richardson has literally the QB1 in his range of outcomes. Both of those things, to me, change your season. If you take them and you get it right, more than if you get Cooper Kupp right without extenuating circumstances and factors, whatever. I'm struggling between Brooks and Richardson at 1 and 2.
Oh, if that's the case, obviously I just showed my hand, but.
No. I just don't know if I want. Okay, you know what? I'm going to go ahead and say that Richardson is my number two and Brooks is my number one, which means we are all tied up here with these three guys, which means producer Colin, I'm only ordering it this way, by the way, because I was scared and I want Colin to break the tie because this is a close call. So producer Colin and his extensive medical background in the chat, please let me know who is most likely to be this year's Breece Hall between Richardson, Brooks, Cooper Kupp. He says he would have gone with Anthony Richardson. Okay, yeah, so Richardson. Anthony Richardson is our winner here. And you know what? That was the guy we were most consensus on. Right. And that makes sense. We both have had him as number two. So Anthony Richardson is this year's Breece Hall. Edwin, how do we feel about that?
Yeah, I'll take it. I mean, I'll take it all day. I toyed with the idea of, and again, the league that we're in, to just to stand on business and take Anthony Richardson with the 1.01. Probably not the wisest thing I would do in a super flex,
but that would be incredible. Because Dalton, by the way, Dalton Del Don, for the listeners, he is in this league too, and I would just love to see what Dalton would have said in the chat. But now you've shown your hand.
Yeah, I showed my hand. So yeah, that was tough. But I 100% agree with you on Kupp. I think that he can bring value, like you said, it's probably not going to be like as groundbreaking as if Jonathan Brooks finishes as a top 10 running back or even a top 15 running back at this point. And then Anthony Richardson can break fantasy. So I don't have it's hard to argue, right? Like I totally am on the same page here.
Incredible. Well, that was a great way to end Flip the Script, because I think that was by far the hardest and most difficult finalist to vote on of the series, which is going to be incredible when the Yahoo Fantasy handle tweets this out. And again, all the reply guys are literally just going to say, can't stay healthy, can't throw the ball, not accurate, whatever. It's going to be great. There's the Anthony Richardson thing, if it doesn't work out, it's going to be so great for everybody in the fantasy industry. All right.
Exactly. It's going to be great.
Edwin, real quick, tell the people where they can find your work and everything that they can check out from you. And of course, our buddy Jorge Martin over there on the Injury Prone Podcast.
Yeah, for sure. So the fantasy stuff, obviously Injury Prone Podcast, go there anywhere you find your podcast. And then obviously Fantasy Points, right? Love me some Fantasy Points. And then if you're an athlete in Denver, Pro Athlete Physical Therapy, Sports PT, if you need it, come hit me up.
Boom. I would completely co-sign that. I'm in PT right now. Actually.
Hey.
So I should have moved to Denver and could have had you help me
that's
out.
That's the solution is move halfway across the country.
Yeah. Don't worry, I haven't moved recently, so it would just be totally great. But maybe next time, maybe in another lifetime. All right.
There you go.
Edwin, appreciate you, buddy. This was electric. Great pitch by you to invite yourself into my house and kill it on this show. So thank you very much, my friend. That is going to do it for us today. And that's a wrap on Flip the Script, which means literal football, pretty close to football, is basically here. Football's back for the 10th time this year and the 10th time going forward. Training camps are opening this week and next, if you didn't know, that is happening. Speaking of Anthony Richardson, Anthony Richardson's number one fan, Dalton Del Don, is going to join the pod on Thursday as we look at the biggest training camp questions we want answered at the wide receiver and tight end position. That's going to be fantastic. Until then, we're out.